I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.
It is gone! A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins. Game over! Bronco wins it!
He got it! Pulled it right out of the bushes!
Swing and a miss! He got him! And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss! Struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 233. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we got the latest hot stove news and rumors here for you. We're going to go without a guest on this episode of the podcast. You know, I'm recording this the day before Thanksgiving, and I didn't want to bug anybody about doing a stupid podcast the day before Thanksgiving. So it's a solo pod, but that means I'm going to get some of your help. I've got some mailbag questions I'm going to take here in just a couple of minutes. We're also going to talk about some of the other news the team made this week. The Phillies have released their updated 40-man roster decisions ahead of the Rule 5 draft deadline. The Hall of Fame ballot for next year is out, and a couple prominent Phillies are on it, including, of course, Roy Halladay. And the Phillies make an announcement regarding the retirement of three members of their core from just a few years ago. And I'll have your stat of the week on those three players whose retirement ceremonies we're going to see in 2019. But again, before we get into the show, guys, I've mentioned this the last couple of weeks, and again, I don't want to ask you to do this too often, but if you haven't done so yet, and you could go to Apple Podcasts, to the Good Fight podcast feed, and leave a review, a five-star rating, but more specifically, a review, that would be awesome, because what that does is it helps new people find the podcast when they're on Apple Podcasts, and it goes a long way towards helping the show grow a little bit. So if you would be able to go to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review, I'm going to read a couple on here, and they don't all have to be glowing complimentary. You can leave a comment about the Phillies or something you like about Hittin' Season or the Dirty Inning or Continued Success. And by the way, if you haven't caught the last episodes of Continued Success and the Dirty Inning, you really need to listen to them. They're fantastic. Great episodes by Justin and Liz and Trevor Strunk. They do an amazing job filling out the Good Fight podcast roster here. I mean, just some tremendous stuff. I told you I would read some of the ratings and reviews, some of the really good ones. A lot of these are just very complimentary, which I appreciate greatly. Rans106 says, terrific, funny, informative, insightful. Hittin' Season is the perfect antidote to the knee-jerk, short-sighted opinions on the Phillies that you get on mainstream sports radio. Great podcast. Thank you very much, Rans106. C_hat7 said, really good show, lots of insightful guests and conversation. Best place for hot stove news and talk. Can't wait to listen after we sign Bryce. I can't wait until we podcast after we sign Bryce. C_hat7. Also, TJ's back tat with the fantastic 5-star review asking, is Harper coming? TJ's back tat, I wish I knew the answer to that question. So, again, the very best reviews as you guys leave them, I'll be reading on the podcast every week. So, again, go to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and a review if you haven't done so already. Your help in that would be greatly appreciated. All right, let's get into some of the big news and rumors regarding the hot stove. And it was a busy day on Wednesday. It seemed as though John Heyman was just in overdrive with one rumor after another, and we got a couple others here and there. And what we're discovering here as we move through the early stages of the hot stove season is that you are going to hear the Phillies connected to everybody. Every free agent, every big money star that can be acquired in a trade, every starting pitcher, every closer, every big bat, the Phillies are going to be connected to them. And you're going to hear a lot of rumors about players on the Phillies roster that they could be looking to deal. And we got a little bit of all of that here over the last couple of days. So let's just run these down here real quick. John Heyman, again, was very busy. You're going to hear me mention his name a bunch here over the next few minutes. He wrote, "Prevalent baseball executive opinion," this is on Twitter, "Harper and Machado wind up with New York and Philly, one to each, but which one goes to which team? Philly seems most aggressive. Yanks have admitted interest in Machado, but downplayed interest in Harper." And then he writes in parentheses, "They have had internal and external Bryce Harper talks, however." And I still think that Harper is most likely to come to Philadelphia. I would be very surprised if it was the other way around, if only because it just seems as though we've heard the Yankees openly talking about Machado more than Harper. And I think Machado wants to play in New York more than Harper wants to play in New York, just based on what you've heard from the people around them. I have no inside information on any of this stuff, by the way. I'm just an aggregator of this content from the web to you with a little bit of analysis thrown in here. But again, I still would prefer to see Bryce Harper here over Manny Machado, but I would certainly go with Manny Machado if the Yankees are the ones to sign Bryce Harper. John Morosi of MLB.com says the Phillies are considering other big names besides Harper and Machado, that they're also showing interest in Patrick Corbin and Craig Kimbrell, probably the best starting pitcher and relief pitcher on the market. Now, earlier this week, the Yankees made a big trade for James Paxton for three prospects, so he is off the table for the Phils. But it still feels to me like the Yankees, even though they just traded for Paxton, could sign Corbin. And that would leave Jay Happ as a better, more cheaper option. Of course, we've heard the Yankees connected to Happ as well. Happ finished up the season with the Yankees after New York traded for him at the trade deadline. So it's entirely possible the Yankees could decide to go the cheaper route and re-sign Happ on a 2 or 3 year deal, which would leave Corbin open on the market. And most people have widely speculated that Corbin was going to head to the Yankees. I think he has all but said he'd be disappointed if he didn't end up on the Yankees. And the Yankees want to make another big splash in the pitching arena. That's the weakness of their team, is the starting rotation. Adding Patrick Corbin and James Paxton, both in the same offseason, adding those two guys to Luis Severino, watch out, Boston. I mean, now you've got something serious to deal with there. But if Corbin is not signed by the Yankees, I think the Astros make a ton of sense. I do think the Phillies make some sense there. It seems to me, and everything that you're reading says, that Matt Klentak and the Phillies want to add a left-handed starting pitcher, a good left-handed starting pitcher, to this rotation. We know that for the last couple of years, it has been really right-handed heavy. Until Ranger Suarez started a game for the Phillies this year, they hadn't had a left-handed starter since Adam Morgan, I think, at the end of the 2016 season. So it had been a year and a half since they'd had a left-handed starter start a game for them. So they no doubt want to get one of those guys. But will it be Corbin? Will it be Jay Happ? We also heard Heyman mention that the Phillies are thought to be a player for Corbin. So Heyman is kind of upping Morosi's rumor for Corbin. So we've heard Phillies and Corbin linked by two different people. And Heyman reports the Phillies are thought to be a player for Dallas Keuchel as well. Now, we have to parse these words a little bit. What does thought to be a player mean? What does considering mean? Internal, external discussions, interest. You know, these are all buzzwords that these national writers who are dealing with rumor use during this time of year, because nobody is going to go on the record. Nobody is going to give you anything locked and loaded. And so you really don't know which of these rumors are poppycock, which is nonsense, and which are actual. Yes, I use poppycock. I'm a dad. I use words like poppycock. You're just going to have to deal with it. Which of these rumors are crap and which are not? It's we just don't know. And so we basically take everything in and analyze whether it makes sense or not. It makes sense for the Phillies to be linked to Corbin and Keuchel. How interested are they in those two guys? Are they interested in more one much more than the other? I tell you, I'm not a big Keuchel guy. He doesn't throw hard, he doesn't strike guys out, and he relies too much on his defense. When you are playing for a team like the Astros, and you've got a bunch of good, solid young defenders behind you, you can be a very effective starting pitcher that way. We saw the Phillies pitching get hurt tremendously by their defense last year. I do think the defense will be better in 2019, but only because it has to be. I still don't think it's going to be an above-average defense, in which case I think Keuchel, even though he's moving from the American League to the National League and moving out of a league that has a designated hitter in it, I think he would prefer to go for a team that has a good defense behind him, because he's going to have a ballooned ERA otherwise. Look at Jake Arrieta's ERA last year, how often he got hurt. Well, actually, his ERA actually was good for most of the season because he was giving up a ton of unearned runs. But guys like Velasquez and Pivetta, they had high ERAs, and a lot of that was due to the defense. So that's why I'm not in on Keuchel. Patrick Corbin, I would love Patrick Corbin. I don't know if I love Corbin to the tune of 6 years and $125 million. And we know the Phillies have said over and over again, Andy McPhail and Matt Klentak have said over and over again, they don't want to have that kind of a contract for a starting pitcher. Now, maybe if there was a starting pitcher who was the same age as Machado or Harper, somebody, if Jose Fernandez had not passed away in that boat accident, he would have been a free agent this offseason too. That would be a guy you give 6 years and $200 million to. But I don't know that you give that kind of money to Patrick Corbin. I don't know that you give 6 years to Patrick Corbin. Are you better off giving 2 or 3 years to Jay Happ, who has proven that he can pitch in his old age? I don't know. I'm not going to be upset if the Phillies go out and spend big on Corbin. I just think it would be a mistake to give him a lot of years, and I think it would really fly in the face of everything we have told that Klentak and McPhail's philosophy is on bringing in outside help. Now, Heyman reports, not only are the Phillies shopping Carlos Santana, they're also shopping Tommy Hunter and Pat Neshek. This is going to be a tough sell, gang. There are so many relievers on the free agent market. I don't know why teams would go out of their way to trade for one, especially if you are just a right-handed middle reliever like Hunter or Neshek. They're both pretty good. I'm ready for Hunter to go. He's inconsistent. I don't think he's anything special, but he has his moments, and I bet you there's another team that's going to look at him and think he can pitch better in 2019. Neshek was a very good relief pitcher when he took the ball for the Phillies, but you hear a lot that Neshek did not always take the ball from Gabe Kapler, that he didn't always feel like he was ready or wanted to pitch. I don't want a guy like that in my bullpen. As good as he is, I don't want a guy like that in my bullpen. So I'm ready to see Pat Neshek go. Now, that means they're going to have to get some help. And MLB.com's John Morosi reports it looks as if the Phillies don't land Patrick Corbin or Craig Kimbrell, they could look to the trade market to target Arizona's Zach Greinke or the Marlins' closer Edwin Diaz. Now, what makes these very realistic is that Greinke is owed a metric ton of money and years left. But he is also proving that he knows how to pitch with diminished stuff. He is a smart pitcher. And I think there is absolutely real interest by the Phillies in Zach Greinke. It all depends on what it would cost prospect-wise. I think if the Phillies took on all of Greinke's salary, sure, it would lessen the prospect cost. I would certainly use Adonis Medina in a deal to land Zach Greinke. Edwin Diaz would probably be more expensive because he is so young, because he is probably, if not the best closer in baseball, one of the three best closers in baseball. He's also under team control for 4 more seasons, coming off a 57-save season. Really, Edwin Diaz is exactly the type of pitcher the Phillies need. Whether or not it would cost them Sixto Sanchez or not, that's the big question. I would not give up Sixto Sanchez for Edwin Diaz. I wouldn't do it. There are players I would give up Sixto Sanchez for. One of those guys is someone that we're hearing the Mets are reportedly considering dealing, and that's Noah Syndergaard. Now, John Heyman reports that at least 6 rival organizations are said to be real players for the Mets' stud right-hander, and that the Mets want to be able to fill multiple holes with real impact. Now, I find it highly unlikely that the Mets would trade Syndergaard within the division, even though I don't think teams should be afraid to do that if that team in the division is offering them the very best deal, and it's a deal you just can't turn down. Now, if it's close, if one team is offering a little bit more than the team in your division, okay, I might make the trade to the team out of my division because I don't think the Mets want to face their own guy multiple times, 4 or 5 times a year. And I just can't see them trading one of their elite young starting pitchers to a bitter division rival like the Phillies. So I don't think the Phillies are in on Noah Syndergaard. I don't think the Mets would allow them to be in on Syndergaard. Sixto Sanchez would absolutely have to be a part of this deal, along with a bunch of other guys. And I would, yes, include Sixto in a deal for Thor. I know Syndergaard has had his injury issues, but he is still just 26 and has incredible stuff. He's also under team control for two more years. I would absolutely do that deal. Last thing before we get to the mailbag, Manny Machado had some interesting comments in an interview that he did with MLB.com's Mark Feinsand. And folks, this is pure damage control. Manny Machado is trying to dig himself out of the hole that he created for himself when he said during the National League Championship Series after failing to run out a couple of ground balls that, quote, I'm not the type of player that's going to be Johnny Hustle. He's trying to walk that back now because he knows those comments are hurting him in his free agency. There are general managers and there are teams that were turned off by that. And one of those teams might be the Phillies. We heard Matt Klentak say that it was something that they took note of. He didn't say one way or the other because Matt Klentak is a smart guy and he gives away nothing in interviews. Nevertheless, that's smart. You don't want to give away your hand. So we don't really know what the Phillies' interest level is in Machado. Is it lessened greatly because of those comments, or are they still really interested anyway? But what Machado said was, quote, when I was asked that question, I was definitely on the defensive, and I was wrong to answer it the way that I did because, looking back, it doesn't come across how I meant it. Please. For me, I was trying to talk about how I'm not the guy who is eyewash. There's a difference between fake hustle for show and being someone who tries hard to win. I've always been the guy who does whatever he can to win for his team, but I know how I said it and how that came across, and it's something I take responsibility for. Here's the kicker. Here's the key part. I look forward to talking with each GM and owner that we meet with about that or any other questions they have. And boom, there it is. He's doing this to allay the fears of GMs and other teams because he knows he stepped in it. And I think he meant it at the time. Now, I'm also not one of those guys that expects my players to hustle every single solitary time. But when you're down 3-1 in the World Series and it's a one-run game and you don't hustle out of the box on a ball that you hit into the gap in left center field, I'm sorry, that's a problem for me. And when you're playing in the National League Championship Series, I think you got to run out every ball. Now, if it's mid-August, second game of a doubleheader, you know, random game in mid-May, routine grounder to shortstop, if you're not busting it down the line 100%, I'm not going to kill you. I don't need you to be quote-unquote Johnny Hustle. But there are situations, there are times when you got to be going balls to the wall. And the postseason is one of those times, and we didn't see that from Machado at various times. At certain times, we did. That's the conundrum of Manny Machado. He also did say at the end of the day that he'll consider every situation carefully as far as free agency because the ball does rest in his court. He said, quote, there's a lot that goes into my decision. First and foremost, I'll think about my family, where they'll be comfortable and happy. I want to be in a place where I can win long term and be a part of a World Series for many years to come. It's too early to tell what else might play a part, but I'm excited and looking forward to it. I don't think it's too early to tell what else is going to play a part here, Manny. You should probably have a pretty good idea which teams you're looking at here. And he did say, I think as long as the fans are behind the team and you have a team that's going to do everything they can to win, that's all that counts. So he's trying not to rule out small market teams and mid-market teams or teams that may not necessarily be World Series contenders right now. He said championship teams come from all over, like Kansas City from a couple years ago and Boston this year, so it can happen. Well, Boston didn't come out of nowhere. They made the playoffs last year, too, so I don't know exactly where he's going with that. But he seems to be in full damage control mode, and I think it's strange that it took 3 weeks for them to craft the position that, oh, he doesn't want to look fake hustle. He doesn't want to look like he's hustling in a fake way. No, that's not what you meant. You meant that you don't feel it's necessary to run hard every time, and I don't have a problem with that. But the Johnny Hustle comments definitely are eye-openers for general managers around the league, especially general managers who are considering investing $300 million in a player. So that's your latest rundown on the latest hot stove rumors, the latest hot stove news as we head into the Thanksgiving holiday.
This ball is out of here!
All right, we're going to move over to the mailbag now, and what I like to do with the mailbags is I like to give the Hit and Season Patreon contributors first crack at mailbag questions. And so all of our mailbag questions on this episode of the podcast come from the Patreon. So if you would like to be part of the group that gets priority For mailbag questions, go to patreon.com/hittenseason and sign up on the $5 tier, because not only do you get priority positioning for mailbag questions, you also get bonus podcasts. I do This Week in Philly's History, which is a history podcast, and I try to do one of those every week. It's generally a shorter podcast, 15 to 30 minutes, but it's pretty good content. Justin Clue does a couple of versions of the Dirty Inning for the Patreon, and I write a weekly newsletter that we have now made available for all of our $5 tier members as well. We got rid of the $10 tier, so everything that we're doing now, all of the bonus podcasts, all of the bonus material, it's all part of the $5 tier, including priority position for mailbags. So go to patreon.com/hittenseason and become a $5 a month tier member, and you'll get some extra stuff and some extra opportunities to be a part of the show. Our first question comes from Patreon member Peter O'Keefe. He asks, have you seen Ben Lindbergh's piece on Bryce Harper? Many of the reasons people seem to have soured on Machado seem to relate to effort, but to me, the clips that he shows of Harper are far more damning in terms of effort than Manny not legging out grounders. Is Harper the next Bobby Abreu? Will he get away with low-effort outfield play in Philadelphia? For the record, I loved Bobby and thought he was treated very poorly. I also have been wanting Machado more since day one. I did see the Lindbergh piece, Peter, and it is interesting to note that, and Mike Petriello of MLB.com also did a piece that came out on Wednesday looking in depth at Bryce Harper's defense. And the big takeaway is that, yes, Bryce Harper did not get to nearly as many balls as he normally does. His defensive numbers, even if you don't believe in defensive metrics, across the board, across multiple different companies, across multiple different statistics, all of them said the same thing, that Bryce Harper's range, that his ability to make tough plays as well as routine plays was substandard this year, that he was one of the worst defensive outfielders in baseball. Now, he has not traditionally been one of the worst defensive outfielders in baseball, so what happened? The general consensus is he did not lose any foot speed. He's just as fast as he ever has been. He's just as athletic as he's ever been. It seems as though, because he knew he was coming up on free agency and because he has suffered injuries in the past, hustling in the outfield and hustling on the bases, that he was trying to take care of himself this season. It was an interesting stat from the Lindbergh piece. And he notes that the most convincing piece of corroborating evidence for the theory that Harper eased off the gas this year was that if you look at the 764 opportunities that he had in right field from 2016 to 2017, he dove for the ball 11 times and slid 17 times. In 506 opportunities, so a little less than 200 fewer, in right and center field last year, Harper dove one time and slid four times. Among the 21 outfielders with at least 460 opportunities, Harper and Nick Castellanos were the only outfielders not to dive more than once. So here's the deal. I think if Harper comes to Philadelphia, after he gets his paycheck, I do think that he would put in more of an effort in the outfield. Does it raise some concerns a little bit? Yes. Does it scare me off Bryce Harper? No more than Manny Machado's lack of hustle scares me off of Manny Machado anymore. I still think you have to understand these are two prime free agents, and what this team in their mid-20s, which you never see, and what this team needs is offense. This team needs bats, and these are two great bats. They've got to get one of these two guys. I think Harper will play better defense in 2019 when he doesn't have his impending free agency weighing over his head. And I also think that weighed into his issues at the plate in the first half of the season, that and the fact that the Nationals were not in the playoff hunt really at any point last season. It was just a weird season in Washington, and I think that those confluence of events created a somewhat down season for Harper, because if you look at his Baseball Reference wins above replacement, he was worth 1.5 wins above replacement. Obviously, he's a better player than that. Fangraphs had him at 3 wins. Steamer is projecting him at about a 5-win player next year, and I think that's about what you can expect from Bryce Harper, and from Manny Machado also is projected to be a 5-win player according to the Steamer projections. If you go to Fangraphs, you can find those numbers there. Steve Appleman asks, what are your expectations for Sir Anthony Dominguez for the 2019 season? Do you chalk up his second-half struggles to being new to the majors, and will he do better with a full offseason to prepare? Or do you think he was a flash in the pan? I think Dominguez, with an offseason under his belt where he knows he's going to be a relief pitcher and he can go into the season knowing that Gabe Kapler kind of wants him to be a fireman type guy, to pitch an inning or two here and there, to come back out for a second inning. I think he'll be better prepared in 2019. When he first came up, his stuff was electric. And I think he just got tired as the year went on. I think hitters caught up to him a little bit, and he wasn't able to adjust. I also think he just got tired. He pitched a lot last year, and in a different way than he had ever pitched before. It's an adjustment to go from being a starting pitcher, which he was in the minors, to being a major league reliever. And don't forget, at the start of last year, Dominguez was in single-A ball. He was in high-A ball, but he was still in single-A ball. He barely played any double-A. He barely pitched any double-A and didn't pitch a single inning in triple-A. So I think Sir Anthony Dominguez is going to be fine. His stuff is incredible. I think a full offseason under his belt where he's thinking about being a reliever, thinking about being a fireman-type guy will do him wonders. I think he'll be in great shape next year. Sir Anthony Dominguez is one of the pluses on the Phillies heading into next season. Stephen Brooke asks, what would be your ideal offseason? Mine would be to sign Machado, Wilson Ramos, Justin Wilson, Cody Allen, Marwin Gonzalez, and sign or trade for a starter like a Corbin, Sonny Gray, Michael Fulmer, etc., and use pieces like Cesar, Franco, Santana, and some prospects to get them done so that it frees up third base, second base, and first base so we can move Reese back to first and get rid of the logjam in the infield. Yes. Yes to all that. I mean, I think that's the thing about this offseason is that there are so many directions that it can go because there are guys you can sign. First of all, signing Harper or Machado is a must. They have to get one of those two guys. If they sign Harper, then I think going after Marwin Gonzalez or Josh Donaldson is a good deal. Marwin Gonzalez, every team is going after Marwin Gonzalez. He's probably going to be overpriced, so maybe I think he'd be a perfect fit for this team, but for the years and the money that he's likely to get as someone who everyone is pursuing, may not be worth it. You know, listen, if Josh Donaldson is still lingering heading into spring training because he thinks he's going to get a 4 or 5 year deal, I would go to a 1 year deal with an option on Josh Donaldson for third base next year. Of course I would. If it's not going to cost me a lot, if it's not going to be a huge contractual commitment, I'm fine with Josh Donaldson at third base if you sign Bryce Harper. If you get Manny Machado, I don't think you need Josh Donaldson at third base, but I certainly, again, I would not mind Josh Donaldson on this team on a cheap 1 or 2 year deal. I also think the Phillies signing Patrick Corbin would be great. I also think signing Jay Happ would be great, or trading for Greinke. Trading for Madison Bumgarner was part of my original plan. Trading for Edwin Diaz, if possible. If you can get Edwin Diaz and not have to include Sixto Sanchez in the deal, I would do that too. Because the Phillies could really use a great closer, a great young closer that they can have in the back of their bullpen for the next 4 or 5 years. That would be absolutely ideal. No doubt about it. And if they don't get Bryce Harper, I'd love to see the Phillies get Michael Brantley. Or you could make a trade for, you know, one of the many Diamondback players who are out there. Robbie Ray, you know, if you get a left-handed Robbie Ray onto the team, or David Peralta is a good player. I mean, there's a million different directions they could go. Here's the bottom line. They need an impact. They need at least two good bats. One impact bat, Harper, Machado, then you need another bat. You need a closer. And I don't think you need a stud starting pitcher on this team. You remember going back to last year, the Phillies' starting rotation was the strength of this team. Through August, until their pitchers got tired in September, Phillies starters were killing it. They were fifth in fielding independent pitching and eighth in xFIP through August last year. So this was a starting rotation. I think Vince Velasquez and Nick Pivetta had better seasons than anybody cares to remember. The peripherals tell you so, and I think the defense really hurt those guys ERA-wise. And so I don't know that you need Patrick Corbin, but if you can trade for Zach Greinke and it doesn't, you know, all you're basically doing is taking on his contract and giving up some prospects that you can live with, I'd love to have Greinke in the starting rotation. There's just a million different ways you can go. I don't think I have an ideal offseason in mind. They need to get two more offensive players, they need to get another starting pitcher, and they need to get a closer, a very good relief pitcher on this team next year to help fill up some of those holes. And if they get both, I do still think, if they get both Harper and Machado, it's a very successful offseason. I don't think people talking about. I saw Casey Stern on the MLB Network radio show this week talking about the Phillies shouldn't get Harper and Machado if they have the opportunity, because then you wouldn't have any money to do anything else. And I think that's baloney. I think they would be able to do that, as we talked about on the podcast on Sunday night with Justin and Liz. My good buddy Paul Pazimino from Twitter, also from the Patreon, asks, we've heard a lot about how big changes are coming and everyone is available except for Nola and Hoskins, but if we get to 2019 with an infield of Alfaro at catcher, Hoskins, Kingery, Crawford, and Santana on the infield, and Williams, Harper, and Herrera in the outfield with Quinn as a backup, and one decent lefty starter, will that be enough to make the Phillies legit contenders in 2019? Will that defense and offense be above average enough? It's a great question. It might not be. It might not be enough. You're still looking at an outfield that is, we saw Nick Williams have troubles in the outfield. I just went over the troubles Bryce Harper had in the outfield last year. If you've got Santana at third base, he's not going to play third base every day if you've got Santana at third base. I still don't know what you have with Crawford at shortstop in terms of defense, although if they don't get Machado, I want Crawford at shortstop next year. Unless they trade for somebody like Gene Segura or something like that. But, I think you'd have to see improvement from a number of these guys. Alfaro would have to improve. He'd have to cut down on his strikeout rate and improve the other areas defensively that a catcher needs to be good at besides pitch framing. Scott Kingery at second base, I think, is going to be fine. If they can move Cesar and get Kingery at second base full-time, he's an elite defender at second base. Crawford's a question mark. Santana's a question mark at third. Hoskins at first base is fine. He's okay. Odubel Herrera in the outfield is a question mark. I mean, it's offensively, you would need to see Kingery step up. You'd need Santana to hit for a little bit of a higher average. I think you'd need to see more from Nick Williams. You'd need to see some of these guys improve. The young players, you'd need to see real improvement from those young guys if that particular team is going to make the playoffs. If they play like they did last year, just adding Harper and just adding a decent lefty starter, I'm going to call that Jay Happ. If you add Harper and Happ and that's about it, I don't think it's enough, because I still don't think you've addressed your bullpen enough either. I think there's more work to be done on this team than just those additions. John Morguera asks, do you think Kapler should rest players like Hoskins, Hernandez, Herrera, Santana, Moore? With the amount of versatility they were aiming for with players like Kingery, Crawford, and to an extent Altair and Williams, I assume the days of running your best players into the ground like Utley and Howard would be over. With Hoskins and Hernandez specifically, he didn't seem to react when they hit the skids and were struggling. Is this something he should improve, or do you think it was a result of a less talented roster? I think it's the latter. I think that the Phillies losing Crawford for extended periods of time forced their hand. It took Kingery out of the outfield. We saw Aaron Altair just couldn't play in the majors last year. He was struggling so mightily, they had to send him down to AAA. And so that meant Hoskins had to play every day. It meant Santana had to play every day. They just weren't scoring enough, and those were your two best offensive players last year. They probably should have sat each of those guys a little bit more often than they did, especially when they would go into extended slumps. But there's also the school of thought that you play your way out of slumps, and perhaps that's the direction Gabe Kapler was going. But he didn't have a lot of options last year. Nobody was performing for that offense last season, and he needed those guys in the lineup. I do think your point is right, John, that they don't want to do that. They want to have a nice mix, but I do think that there are certain stars on the team that should play 155 games a year. And there are some guys who should play 160 games a year. I don't know if Santana and Kingery are those guys. I don't know if Harper is one of those guys or Machado, but I do think, you're paying these guys a lot of money. If they're healthy and they're not hurting the team by being out there, they should play. But the occasional rest would certainly, I think, be smart for sure. Scott Goodman asks, there have been rumors that the Phillies are interested in Patrick Corbin, as I mentioned earlier. If the Phillies acquire Corbin or some other starter in free agency, who do you think is the odd man out between Velasquez, Pivetta, and Eflin in the contest for the two remaining starter spots? I gotta say, I'm still not ready to give up on Velasquez or Pivetta in the rotation. And so for me, it's Eflin. And it's not close. I'm not an Eflin guy. I just don't see anything in the secondary stuff. Some people think that Eflin of the three is the best prospect. I don't see that at all. I don't see that at all. I think Eflin is easily the guy that I move out of there, and I make Velasquez and Pivetta my four and my five. not necessarily in that order. And I move Eflin. I send him back down to AAA, or I try to make a bullpen pitcher out of him. Or, you know, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see teams move guys from AAA to the big league roster and back down and all these different kinds of machinations and use their starting pitchers in the bullpen more than we ever have before. So you might see Zach Eflin in kind of a hybrid role if they go out and get another starting pitcher. Although, you know, maybe they do that with Pivetta, because Pivetta's stuff would play incredibly well in the bullpen, and it would probably play better than Eflin's stuff. I just think Pivetta still has tremendous potential as a starting pitcher, more than I think Eflin has. And so I would kick Eflin out of the starting rotation. And then as far as what you do with Eflin, I don't know after that. I mean, whether he goes down to AAA or you try to use him in, you know, in the bullpen is up in the air. It's a matter of whether or not they think Eflin's stuff would translate in the bullpen. Finally, Q-Sort from Patreon asks, what's your assessment of the drafting done in the Klentak era? Do you think the lack of star power in the pipeline has more to do with scouting or player development? Seems like they've had more success in the international market. Also, what are the odds that Bryce or Manny get on the pod if one of them signs here? Hey, listen, I'll try. But I think the odds are long that Bryce Harper or Manny Machado come on the podcast, but I'll give it a try for sure. And, you know, who knows? Maybe the Phillies will deem the podcast and myself worthy enough to speak to the new franchise player, even if it's just for a couple of minutes. I will certainly work on that if and when that happens. As far as player development, look, I think that the Phillies made a change with Joe Jordan out and bringing in Bonifé to be the new director of player personnel, not the director of player personnel, pardon me, the scouting director for the farm system. They clearly feel like they're not getting enough, especially out of their position players, because I agree they've had more success in the international market. I think that Matt Klentak has had some bad luck in terms of draft picks. And bear in mind, Klentak has a hand in selecting these guys, but really the selection of draft picks falls under a different person. Johnny Almaraz is the Phillies director of amateur scouting, and so he's really the guy who is driving the train as far as draft picks are concerned. But when the Phillies had the number one overall pick in the draft, it was an incredibly weak draft. The Mickey Moniak draft was a weak draft. There's no one in that top 10 other than Nick Senzel who really looks like he's going to be a star player. Riley Pint was sidelined with a serious injury for the A's. I mean, the rest of them, nobody is really setting themselves apart. So it really, really kind of doesn't matter who the Phillies, they picked a terrible, terrible year to pick number one overall. The jury is still out on Adam Haseley. And the jury is still out on a lot of the other guys. Alec Bohm was hurt for much of his first few months as a pro last year. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the draft. The Phillies have not had a lot of luck with draft picks recently. Scott Kingery, again, it was a second-round pick that they're hoping works out. But the last few drafts are still very much a question mark, and it does seem as though the team is having trouble developing star position players. So we'll see if this new guy, Bonifé, is able to right the ship a little bit and maybe start to get some more out of these players as they're making their way up through the minors. So that'll do it for this edition of the Mailbag. Again, next time around, we'll open up some more mailbag questions to Patreon listeners. Again, go to patreon.com/hittenseason, get on the $5 a month tier, and next month we'll do another mailbag, and hopefully you will be able to get a question in as well.
This ball is out of here!
All right, a couple other quick things before I let you all enjoy your Thanksgiving dinner. The Phillies made some 40-man roster decisions ahead of the deadline for the Rule 5 draft. All teams had to have a 40-man roster in place ahead of Tuesday night, because anybody left unprotected, not on the 40-man roster, will be eligible for the Rule 5 draft. And there are certain rules as far as which minor league players have to be protected and which don't. It's a little convoluted to get into, so don't worry about it. The Phillies put shortstop Archimedes Gamboa, right-handed pitcher Edgar Garcia, and right-handed pitcher Adonis Medina on the 40-man roster. That puts 38 players now on the 40-man. That number will drop to 37 as soon as Justin Bour is released. Again, he's not going to be claimed by any team, and he's going to refuse an assignment to the minor leagues, which will make him a free agent. So who could be left exposed? AAA starter Tom Eshelman is a guy the Phillies decided not to protect. He's the control and command artist, friend of the podcast. We had on the podcast last year, had a tough season at Lehigh Valley with a 5.84 ERA and 26 starts, 140 innings. Reading right-handed reliever Luke Leftwich is a likely candidate to get picked up by another team. He's 24, struck out more than 10 batters per nine in 44 games last year, 62 and two-thirds innings, had a 3.73 ERA and a 3.14 FIP. Tyler Gilbert is a 24-year-old left-handed reliever who pitched exactly 34 and two-thirds innings for both Reading and Lehigh Valley last year, posted a 2.86 ERA for Reading, struck out more than 10 and a half batters per nine with a 3.63 ERA and 7.2 strikeouts per nine for the Iron Pigs. Big drop there. It does say something that as desperate as the Phillies were for left-handed relievers last year, that Gilbert was not called up. But again, he could be a guy that a team looking to add a cheap young lefty reliever would take a chance on. Dievi Gulyan, I'm not sure I'm saying his name, but the 22-year-old catcher who's currently third on the organization's depth chart at that position, he could be in the big leagues as a backup at some point in 2019. Last year for Reading, he batted 273, 310 with a 515 slugging in Reading, 90 games there with 21 homers and 59 RBIs. There is a shortage of real good catchers in baseball. I would have a hard time believing that he will not be drafted by somebody. Second baseman Daniel Brito, just 20 years old. He's never played more than 27 games above high A ball. He could be drafted, but I doubt it. He's kind of a light hitting second baseman, 252, 309, 340 with four homers in a single A ball last year. One guy who is a possibility to get drafted, but I don't think it'll happen. Reading outfielder Jose Pujols, 23, had a real good year at the plate. Hit 270, 365, 427 in 26 games at Lehigh Valley with four homers. In 95 games at Reading, he had 18 bombs and batted. That was a double A, 270, 365, 427 in 26 games at double A. In 95 games at Clearwater last year, he had 18 bombs and batted 301, 364, 523. He's a guy I'm actually a little bit excited about. So it would not surprise me if a team took a chance on Jose Pujols as well. And again, any team that drafts a player in the Rule 5 draft, they have to keep them on the 25-man roster for the entire season, or else they have to give that player back to the team that had them originally. And so if somebody takes Jose Pujols and they add him to their 25-man roster, and at some point they decide to cut him or that they can't keep him on the active roster, he gets returned back to the Phillies. Also, the Hall of Fame ballot for 2019 is out, and of course, Roy Halladay is on the ballot. He's a solid candidate for inclusion this time around. He could be a first ballot Hall of Famer, and I do wonder if the fact that he died in a plane crash last year will spur voters on to vote for him on the first time on the ballot. A lot of voters they don't vote for anybody their first year on the ballot. And frankly, Halladay's going to get in at some point. Whether or not they choose to honor him his first time on because he died in a plane crash last year is kind of up in the air. I don't think he would have gotten in this year if it had it not been for the plane crash, although I certainly think he would have been inducted in year number two. But listen, he's one of the best pitchers for a decade in baseball. He won a Cy Young Award in both the AL and the NL, was runner-up twice, pitched 16 seasons, led the league in complete games seven times, strikeout-to-walk ratio five times. Among active pitchers since 1998, had the most complete games in the majors at 67, 13 more than Randy Johnson. He's one of six pitchers with at least 200 wins and a .650 winning percentage. And I know we shouldn't care about pitcher wins, but just throwing that stat in the mix. He also pitched a perfect game and had just the second postseason no-hitter in baseball history against the Reds in 2010. For a 10-year stretch from 2002 to 2011, he was one of the five best pitchers in baseball. For me, folks, that is a Hall of Famer. Some other Phillies on the ballot, though. Freddy Garcia, the great Freddy Garcia. Roy Oswalt will be on the ballot. Oswalt's not a Hall of Famer. Juan Pierre. Placido Polanco. And then you have a few guys, and Michael Young, obviously, will be a one and done. A few guys, though, that have some staying power. Scott Rolen, Curt Schilling, and Billy Wagner. Schilling lost some support last year, and obviously some of the things that he has said, some of the stuff that he has tweeted out and put on his Facebook page against journalists, racially tinged and racist posts have hurt him among the voting electorate. I don't think he's ever going to get in because I think the younger the voters get, the more seriously they take that kind of stuff. And I think he's going to lose support over these next few years. Billy Wagner, just to me, I know he's got good numbers, but I don't, when I think of Billy Wagner, I don't think of a Hall of Famer. I don't ever think of him as one of the five best closers in baseball during the time that he was around. It's just not, I don't feel that way. You know, and I think you've got to be one of the three or five best closers in your era to be inducted into the Hall of Fame if you're a relief pitcher. I just don't think Billy Wagner was one of those guys. Scott Rolen is a really interesting case. If you're a fan of the new metrics, and including defense and base running, Scott Rolen is in the conversation. I think Scott Rolen and Jimmy Rollins have very similar arguments to be made. Jimmy Rollins actually won an MVP award, whereas Rolen didn't. I think Rollins' case is actually maybe even a little bit better than Rolen's case is. Again, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but just based off of memory and the numbers that I do remember in my head, I think Rollins is borderline, and Rolen is certainly borderline. I don't think Rolen gets in. And I don't know that I believe Rolen is a Hall of Famer. On my newsletter this week, I think I did put Rolen in. I put out my ballot, who my 10 people would be. So check out the newsletter if you want to sign up on the $5 tier. I think I have Rolen in my 10. I don't remember off the top of my head, but you know, the Hall of Fame is kind of a sacred place, and I'm more of a peak guy as opposed to like somebody who is there for a long, who does stuff for a long time. You know, like Craig Biggio. I would rather put in Utley than a Craig Biggio. Let's see. Did I have him in? I did. I put Rolen in my 10. And I do think he's an underrated third baseman. If you didn't want Rolen in the Hall of Fame, I couldn't argue with you. There's lots of good candidates. And so those are the Phillies who will be on the Hall of Fame ballot here in 2019. A number of them will be one and done, but Rolen, Schilling, and Wagner will certainly be on there multiple seasons. And we'll see if Halladay gets in or not this time around. I think it would be amazing if Halladay is inducted in his first year of eligibility.
This ball is out of here!
One final thing before we get out of here. This is going to be a little bit of news combined with your stat of the week. The Phillies announced that they will hold retirement ceremonies for the three biggest cogs of their 2007-11 core, Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, and Ryan Howard, on the 10th anniversary of the 2009 pennant-winning team. Rollins' ceremony will be first, of course. He leads off, so this makes sense. On Saturday, May 4th, against the Nationals at 7:05, Utley will go second. He'll be honored on Friday, June 21st, against the Marlins at 7:05. And then Howard will go last on Sunday, July 14th, versus the Nats at 1:05. Here are your stats of the week. One stat for each guy. Ryan Howard celebrated his birthday this week also. Happy birthday, Ryan. He holds the record for most home runs by a player in their first 1,000 games in Major League history, 279. No one hit more home runs in their first 1,000 games than Ryan Howard's 279. Jimmy Rollins, of course, is the Phillies' all-time leader in hits. We know that. But he also has the most at-bats and doubles in team history and is second in total bases, extra base hits, and stolen bases. I did not know all that. Finally, Chase Utley leads all Phillies second basemen in games played, home runs, hits, RBIs, and extra base hits. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to all the Patreon friends who checked in with mailbag questions this week. And again, you can get in on that by going to patreon.com/hittin'season and signing up on the $5 tier. Also, subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts, and subscribe to The Good Fight. You'll get this podcast, Continued Success, and The Dirty Inning. And please don't forget, on Apple Podcasts, leave a rating and a review. The funnier, more creative reviews will get read on the podcast as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and enjoy your Thanksgiving. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.
Hello. I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.